Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is your Calls Media Roundtable. Now we are going to discuss the ongoing campaign to shut down New York City's Rikers Island jail complex. Several elements of this segment will involve descriptions of violence and brutality, just to let you know. Those who are not familiar with Rikers most likely learned about it after the New Yorker's Jennifer Gonerman wrote a story about Kalief Browder, a Bronx teenager who was accused of stealing a backpack on May 15, 2010, just 10 days before he turned 17. He spent 3 years on Rikers Island without being convicted of a crime, and during that time, he endured starvation, 2 years in solitary confinement, and was brutally assaulted by officers and inmates. He attempted to end his life several times at Rikers. 2 years after his release, he hung himself in his mother's home. In 2017, New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio said Rikers would close in 10 years. The New York City Council has voted to close Rikers in 2026, but advocates say that is not good enough. They note, as today's guest, journalist Victoria Law, reports, violence and other abuses have long plagued Rikers. Approximately 1,500 of the nearly 6,000 detained have been awaiting their day in court for more than a year. Victoria Law is a freelance journalist who focuses on the intersections of incarceration, gender, and resistance. In her latest piece for The Nation, titled "Rikers Detainees Are Being Transferred from One Hellhole to Another," she writes about the transfer of nearly 230 women and transgender people from the notorious Rikers Island Jail to two state prisons some 40 miles from New York. Victoria Law is the author of Resistance Behind Bars, The Struggles of Incarcerated Women. Victoria is co-author of Prison by Any Other Name, The Harmful Consequences of Popular Reforms. Her forthcoming book is called Prisons Make Us Safer and 20 Other Myths About Mass Incarceration. Hi, Victoria. Thank you so much for your work and thank you for joining us.
Thanks, Rose, for covering these issues. I really appreciate it.
Well, we appreciate your work. First off, let's just talk about a few facts about Rikers. So this is basically a jail complex. It's New York City's largest jail complex in the state. According to a report from Fordham University, there are 10 separate jails and infirmaries on the island that house people who are in pretrial confinement. And then it's identified as a complex that houses inmates serving terms of 1 year or less, while prisons house inmates serving sentences of more than a year. So tell us more about this, just to visualize it. So it's basically a complex of jails, right?
Yes. For listeners who have ever flown into New York City and flown into LaGuardia Airport, Rikers Island is located directly across the river from LaGuardia Airport. So you can actually see, depending on where you are sitting on the plane, Rikers Island as you take off and land from the airport. It is long been a site of horrific violence and chaos. There are currently 10 active jail buildings. So there are 10 jails on the island, one of which is a women's jail, which houses cisgender women and some trans women, but not all trans women. The majority of people who are at Rikers Island are awaiting trial. So they have not had their day in court. Like Kalief Browder, they have been arrested and accused of a criminal action, but they have not been able to go forth and prove their innocence or guilt. Nearly, as you mentioned, nearly 1,500 have been waiting for more than 1 year for that day in court. And Rikers also currently holds 105 people serving sentences of less than 1 year, or what we call a city sentence as opposed to a state sentence. And then 149 people who are there simply because they violated conditions of their parole. It does not mean that they've committed a new crime. It means that they perhaps failed to meet with their parole officer, or they changed addresses without notifying their parole officer and getting permission, or they changed jobs, or they were out past curfew, or they failed a urine test because they had been smoking some marijuana, which is now legal in New York City. So it's any number of violations that, had they not been on parole, would not have involved any sort of sanction or incarceration.
Why is it that people who have not been convicted of a crime and cannot afford their bail, why are they sent to a violent prison like Rikers? I mean, to think that Kalief Browder, who was just about to turn 17, who was accused of stealing a backpack, he said he never stole the backpack. Why would someone like Kalief Browder be sent to Rikers Island?
I mean, what we have to remember is that the criminal punishment system is set up so that people get certain people, mostly Black, Brown, immigrant, and low-income people, get funneled into the system. And once you're in, it's very hard to extract yourself. So prosecutors have a tremendous amount of power to request bail. First, they set the charges against the person. So the prosecutor in the case of Kalief Browder could have said at any time, you know what, there's not enough evidence to go forth with this case. Or, you know what, this child has been behind bars for 1 year, 2 years, 2.5 years, 3 years on this, and we're going to drop the charges. The prosecutor could have said, this is a 16-year-old who will not do well on such a violent, chaotic, and abusive environment. Let me not ask for a bail that he and his family cannot afford. And instead, what happened was the prosecutor asked for an amount of bail that Kalief Browder and his family could not afford, and the judge granted that bail. And this happens time and time and time again. In January of 2020, New York State enacted a short-lived bail reform law, which allowed for people who were not accused of violent felonies to be able to be released on their own recognizance. And it dropped dramatically the number of people who were sent to New York City jails. But 4 months later, because of pressure from police unions, correctional officer unions, and conservative politicians, those bail reforms were rolled back, and people started seeing greater numbers of people having tremendous amounts of bail set and being sent once again to Rikers Island to await their day in court. So again, it's not necessary. Bail is, for listeners who don't know, bail is set not because of a person's perceived dangerousness, but simply to ensure that they return to court for their court dates. And numerous studies have actually shown that bail is actually not a good method of ensuring that people return to court. Instead, you could have things like text reminders or phone call reminders or ways to transport people to court, and you don't need to lock them up to ensure that they go to court. So what we saw in the aftermath of bail reform being rolled back was more people being sent to Rikers Island. And what we see is this false idea that we need to lock people up in order for society on the outside to be safe. And if this were the case, the United States, with over 2 million people behind bars, should be the safest nation in the world, but it's not. And that same logic applies to sending people to Rikers by the droves.
So as you stated, nearly 90% of those held at Rikers are Black and Latino, according to city statistics. Again, 3/4 have yet to be charged with a crime. So Victoria, if we can follow, let's say, a young Black person like Kalief Browder, for example, or any of the other Black and Brown and low-income people who are not charged with a crime and whose families cannot afford the bail, tell us what they are walking into. Because the reporting that you've done, and when you really read about what's going on at Rikers, just a couple of examples. The jail has 500 cell doors that do not work, a lack of toilets that force inmates to defecate in bags. Those with access to visits report seeing inmates walking around with infected self-harm wounds. There's a lack of access to basic hygiene products. So let's say a young kid is accused of stealing something. This is what he's walking into.
Yes. This is indeed what he is walking into. And currently, because the island is so overcrowded, what ends up happening is they are not even sent to individual cells. I interviewed a man recently. He was an older man, but regardless of age, this is what a person is sent into, who is put in what is called the intake or the reception area, which are basically large-ish cells in which 50 to 60 men or 50 to 60 people are all held, waiting to be assigned to a cell or a dormitory in another part of the jail building. There is one toilet and there is one sink. There are two benches, and people these days spend days and days and days waiting to be assigned to a bed or, you know, someplace or a cell in another part of the jail. And with 50 to 60 people there, even if everybody were not mentally ill, angry, detoxing off of drugs, coming in with all sorts of other issues, you're going to have people's tempers flare. Right. So with all of the chaos at Rikers, what ended up happening where there were fights on a daily basis, there were people trying to sleep, standing up, sleeping, sitting, in whatever ways they could. There was officers would respond to fights by pepper spraying the people who had been fighting, but in an enclosed environment with no windows, that meant that everybody was breathing in the pepper spray. And in an enclosed environment with no windows, in which people are breathing in pepper spray and choking and coughing, that means that the potential for COVID becomes exponential, because everybody is just breathing in everybody else's respiratory droplets. And that leaves aside the fact that oftentimes there's a lack of access to medical care, that, you know, the food, if, you know, the food is often inadequate. It is, you know, sometimes it doesn't come at all. People have missed court dates because they have not been escorted to them. So a court date in which a judge might say, okay, I'm going to let you out on your own recognizance, they don't go to. And then there's always the persistent fear of violence in these jails. And that is what happens when you first enter, not when you've been there a while.
I mean, to think that, you know, one day someone is with their family and the next day they're thrown into this situation. I mean, just the level of fear, uncertainty, and how to just survive. I mean, it's just hard to even imagine. I feel like I'm very glad and grateful that we're finally having conversations about the prison system, the racism involved, the violence involved, but I still feel that in many cases, just humanizing people is really missing. We throw numbers around, money around, the politicians say their thing. But when you think about a young man, woman, trans person who is put into this situation, I mean, I can't even imagine the fear and then the self-defense mode they have to go in immediately.
Yes. Yes. It is truly horrific. And that is if you were a young or a cisgender man going in. There have been numerous instances in which trans women have been placed in men's jails and men's units. And then they are subjected to all sorts of transphobic violence, whether it's physical violence, verbal abuse, sexual harassment. And even though in 2003, the United States passed the Prison Rape Elimination Act, which makes sexual harassment and sexual abuse behind bars illegal, this happens all the time. And there is no way to escape that if you are a trans person in a trans woman placed in a men's jail. So everything that I just described that might have happened to Khalif Browder or any person coming into Rikers today is exponentially heightened if you are misgendered and placed in a men's jail as a trans woman.
Well, and you write about the transfer of nearly 230 women and trans identified people held at Rikers. The transfer began on October 18th to two women's prisons, Bedford Hills, and is it Taconic Correctional Facility?
Yes, they are two prisons that are, strangely enough, across the street from each other in Westchester County, which for listeners unfamiliar with New York, is a very wealthy suburb of New York. These two prisons are right across the street. Bedford Hills is 247 Harris Road. Taconic is 250 Harris Road. Bedford Hills has long had complaints about very similar issues, staff violence, including physical violence, sexual abuse, sexual harassment. You know, there has not been the same level of violence between incarcerated people, as reported in many men's jails and prisons, but there's still always the pervasive threat of violence, particularly from staff who work there. They are separated from their children. And for people who are at Rikers because they cannot afford bail and are awaiting their day in court, there's the extra burden of being torn away not only from your families, but also from your lawyers or social workers or other people that need to come visit you to help you prepare for your upcoming court dates. So in New York City, there are 6 public defender organizations, each of which has also an array of other non-legal professionals, such as social workers and clinicians, who can come and help figure out what is the best outcome for this person. Maybe this person needs to enter a mental health treatment program, not be sent to prison. Maybe this person could best be served in this type of program, not prison. But moving people to Westchester, which is not accessible by public transportation, which requires either a car or more costly and lengthier train ride followed by a taxi ride to these prisons, which are not close to public transportation anyway, means that somebody would have to then devote half of their day to going and trying to see their clients rather than going to the island and coming back, which again is not, I don't want to say that Rikers Island is an easy place to access, because people have often had problems getting to see their clients there, but now you add the extra distance and it just makes it exponentially harder.
And what was the reasoning behind moving these women and trans people?
So the governor of New York, Governor Kathy Hochul, made an announcement that they would move the women and some trans people, and it's unclear whether all trans women will be allowed to go to Bedford Hills and Taconic, or if only some trans women will be allowed to go to Bedford Hills and Taconic, because the state of Rikers Island has been declared an emergency. But what has been declared an emergency will not be fixed by shuttling some people off the island, particularly, again, people who have said, you know, why should we be punished? Because we are not the ones starting fights. We are not the ones who are, you know, engaging in violence and chaos. But it's a way to look as if something is being done and move a population out of Rikers Island that has not necessarily been sort of, if you want to call it that, a problematic population. And it makes it look like the government is doing something when what it is really doing is something that nobody ever asked for. This announcement came without any input from advocates, from groups that work with incarcerated people. It came definitely without the input from family members or others who have loved ones at Rikers Island, and it came without the input from the women at Rikers. There are a little bit more than 200 women currently at Rikers Island, and of those, at least 128 of them signed a petition opposing the transfers. And this is not an easy feat inside jails or prisons to circulate a petition and get people to sign it, because A, you have to try to reach people. And when places are locked down, meaning that people are locked in their individual cells or not able to go to places out of their housing unit, it's hard to get the word out to people. People may also fear signing their name to a petition because they might fear retaliation for trying to speak up for themselves and for others. So the fact that over half of the women at Rikers opposed this and were willing to put their names down on a petition speaks volumes.
Anissa Saber, who was at Rikers and Bedford, told you, quote, "You can't take people from one hellhole and put them in another. I've been locked in Rikers Island. I've been locked in Bedford. Both of these places cause death and despair." Do the statistics also apply to women and trans people, Victoria, that about 85% are in a pretrial confinement?
That is unclear from the numbers that are readily available from the Department of Corrections, but I would assume that is the case, because many people, when they are sentenced, are then sent upstate to Bedford, many women are sent upstate to Bedford Hills to be processed. I actually, ZB, who was whom I interviewed, spent much of his time at Rikers Island. ZB is a Black trans man and was incarcerated in the women's unit, and then was sentenced basically to time served, but had to go upstate to Bedford Hills for 1 week to be processed and then sent back. So the entire time he was at Rikers Island, he was pretrial. He was considered pretrial. And then he had to go to prison, to an actual state prison, to be processed and have his time, his paperwork stamped as he has been here, his time has been served, before he was allowed to go home.
ZB said he was never the target of physical violence by staff at Bedford, but he recalled instances of staff violence toward others. He also said he asked them to use his pronouns, he, him, but the officers didn't want to call him he, they called him she. So, I mean, trans people are dealing with the everyday violence and the abuse, lack of basic needs, but then they also have to deal with transphobia and, please, can you just call me he? And then they call them she.
Yes. Yes. There's the added transphobia. And then one woman told me, but did not want me to, you know, like include her name or, you know, like details of this, that she has seen officers pile onto trans men at Bedford Hills, specifically because they felt that they were somehow threatened by this existence of a trans man, or maybe it was transphobia. It's unclear what has provoked that, but she has noticed that trans men seem to be targets of multiple officers ganging up on them, not one officer physically abusing them, but multiple officers deciding that they are going to gang up on someone. And this is something that I've heard in prison after prison after prison, where there are either trans men or masculine appearing people in women's prisons. So this is not specific to Bedford Hills. It is a problem in prisons across the country.
Right. Victoria Law is a freelance journalist who focuses on the intersections of incarceration, gender, and resistance. And her latest piece for The Nation is called Rikers Detainees Are Being Transferred from One Hellhole to Another. Victoria is the author of Resistance Behind Bars. Her forthcoming book is called Prisons Make Us Safer and 20 Other Myths About Mass Incarceration. In our remaining minutes, Victoria, let's talk about what is to come with Rikers. So many people have been calling for Rikers to be shut down. And so far this year, tragically, 14 people have died in the jail. Several have committed suicide. And on Tuesday, a number of families who lost loved ones protested outside of the Bronx District Attorney's office. They have called Rikers Torture Island. And AM New York quoted Melania Brown, whose sister died in 2019 when she was in solitary confinement at Rikers. Melania said, quote, "This is the problem that we're facing today. Our leaders do not care. This whole America is all about money. There are people dying in Rikers Island." So given that tragic suicides are happening inside this prison, and a number of activists, family members, and even politicians are calling for it to shut down, I mean, is anything being done to deal with these crises?
Well, as we just discussed, what has been done are largely superficial displays of just shuttling people out of the island. Mm-hmm. Yes, that means there will be 200 something less people on that island, but it doesn't solve all of the chronic issues of violence, chaos, officers deciding to call out sick because they get unlimited sick pay, paid sick leave, and so they can do that, people not being able to access their courts. And it doesn't solve the problems of why are prosecutors deliberately sending people to Rikers Island when they know that it is a torturous place? Why are judges agreeing to set bail in amounts that they know the people standing before them can't afford? Because again and again, defense attorneys have said, "Your Honor, I think that this man can afford a $5,000 bail," but the judge will choose to set a $15,000 bail on that person. The 14th person who died in from Rikers actually attempted suicide when he found out that he would be sent to Rikers because he could not afford a $15,000 bail. His suicide attempt was not successful, except that he was sent to the hospital, put on life support. So he did not die right away, spent the entire weekend on life support. And then at the end of the weekend, the decision was made to pull the plug on him. Wow. So he would rather have died than have gone to Rikers Island. And why is it then that people in power continue to send people to that island should be a question that everybody should be asking.
Well, and then you raise a really important larger point. The politician who's in office when Rikers does shut down is going to say, look, we shut down Rikers, case closed. But these issues are happening in prisons and jails across the country.
Yes. And shutting down one torture island does not mean that these conditions will all go away. It simply means that the spotlight is off of this one horrific island, but not all of these other places where these same conditions are happening without the media spotlight and public outcry that we're now seeing about Rikers Island.
Well, Victoria, unfortunately, we're out of time. Thank you for your reporting, and we'd love to have you back to talk about why women are now the fastest growing segment of the incarcerated population, increasing at nearly double the rate of men since 1985. We've done some shows about this, but I think it just deserves so much more attention.
Yes, I would be happy to come back and do this.
All right.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much. Victoria Law is a freelance journalist who focuses on the intersections of incarceration, gender, and resistance. You can find her stories from The Nation. Her latest is Rikers detainees are being transferred from one hellhole to another. Thank you so much. Thanks to Malihe Razazan for producing today's show. Thanks to Joanne Marr and Kevin Vance for engineering our show. Thank you for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's your call.